Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice. Fair use. Successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today is Don Schwartz. He's an actor and journalist. His first book, Telling Their Own Stories, Conversations with Documentary Filmmakers, has just been published and is available on Amazon. His film reviews and filmmaker profiles appear regularly in CineSource magazine, and Don holds BA, MA, and PhD degrees in psychology and counseling.
Thank you so much for coming, Don. Claire and I are really honored to have you.
Oh, it is my honor. Absolutely.
Well, we love what you do. I think it's so important that you honor these documentaries with your reviews, and you write so well. It's always interesting. It's always you capture the story of the film and you let us know what's new and what's out there. And I really appreciate all the reviews you've done, especially on the films that have won our film grant.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I do what I can to set up the film, and my reviews just describe the setup for the film, and I try not to tell the end of the story. I like people to discover what is in the film.
I know. I was reading my notes and watching these films. These five films we'll talk about today are so well done. I mean, don't you know what a hard time they're going to have to choose the winner, don't you think?
Yeah, I feel that way about most of these award programs. I think all the nominees are winners, and I use the cliche, it's Sophie's choice to actually pick a winner.
Right. It's a pretty hard decision to make. Well, let's get started, because today's show is to discuss these five nominees for Academy Award for 2013. So let's start with The Square. Don, what did you think of the film?
Right, Carol. So I wasn't able to see The Square or Cutie and the Boxer, the other one I couldn't see. But obviously I read about it, and I would say it's a must-see. It's about the Egyptian Revolution, and it was started as covering the initial revolution in Tahrir Square. Is that the right pronunciation, Carol?
I think so.
Right. And circumstances shifted and changed over a short period of time, and I understand they were able to cover these what seemed to be unending changes in the overall national politics, who has control of the nation. And I also watched I saw the filmmaker interviewed, and I watched the trailer, and I would say it's a must-see. I couldn't get a screener. That was why I couldn't see it.
Oh, but, well, I have to tell you that there are so many cliffhangers in the film when you start watching it. They chose really good people to follow. This Ahmed Hassan is a great activist, and we all seem to see what was happening in the square and in the movement through his eyes. He was a good choice that she made to follow him.
Yes.
But its politics are dangerous in this film, because everything is going on, and you just seem to be, you feel like you're in the square with these people. And they have some very interesting quotes in there. One general said, none of the guilty will get away with it. And they did say that 15,000 people were either killed or imprisoned or tortured. So I think all of the people that were in that square are martyrs, and they are very important people to honor and understand that they just couldn't take it anymore. They had to get in there and fight for what they felt was right. And they did a good job in getting rid of Mubarak, but the question is, where are they now? Are they any better off? And you really need to see the film to make your own decision. But the filmmaker is Jehane Nujaim, and she did a very good job. She worked 2 years. She was there 2 years filming that, Don.
Well, that makes sense. And I imagine that if we see this film, whenever we see headlines about Egypt, we will read a different story into the headline, knowing this much background of the current recent history.
Yes, it's a real important film to see to understand. Egypt is sort of a beta site for what is being felt around the world, because when food prices are going up as high as they are, it really affects the poor on the earth, and rice is a staple diet, and couscous and grains are so important to people in all over the world. And when that goes up, and I think it went up 20%, it was an incredibly high increase. Where does that money come from? Because they'd rather have these fixed low incomes. So it is a matter of food to them for survival, and I think that was one of the reasons they were in there. They had just had it. That's not even mentioned in the film, but that I read in other places. But I think that the filmmaker has done a marvelous job in making you feel like you understand what is happening in Egypt and what could happen in other countries in the world.
Or what is happening, for all I know.
Well, let's go to the next film. You got to see The Act of Killing, right?
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
It was, to introduce it, it was one of the most unusual documentaries I've ever seen. It's made by Joshua Oppenheimer, and this is his third feature documentary, and his last one was released 11 years ago, so a lot of years went into the making of The Act of Killing. And the setup is that he wanted to cover the Indonesian genocide from the 1965, from the mid-60s. And that's what I call a hidden Holocaust, although that's not a politically correct term, a hidden genocide. There's quite a few of them around the world that haven't been covered. Of course, that's where documentary films come in. And the artist statement, the film has a great website, again, for The Act of Killing. And the artist statement tells a story of he and his crew looking to cover the genocide. And they went to various regions in Indonesia. And what's unique about the genocide of Indonesia is that the perpetrators have not faced justice. They are alive and well, and they hold positions in society rather than being in jail. And
that's the shocking part, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And naturally, the filmmaker had a hard time finding the perpetrators to talk about it. And there was one region where the military government, again, this genocide was perpetrated by a military government that had accomplished a coup in 1965. So there was one region where the military government utilized small-time gangsters, males of a species in the late teens or early 20s, and they were willing to talk. So the filmmaker discovered that these now older men were proud of their role in killing what was called communists, and and they relished in it. They were both revered and feared by the people in their world. And there's one step that the filmmaker made that I don't quite how he made it, but he decided to encourage the perpetrators to reenact scenes on camera of their killing. And so for 2 hours, we get to hear the perpetrators of the genocide in this region talk about their work, describe it in detail, and reenact it in detail with crew support by the documentary filmmaker. And this film was so horrible, I had a very hard time imagining the Oscar committee nominating it. It was 2 hours of horror, even though there's not a drop of bloodshed, there's not one violent act, but you have a vision of humankind at its worst in these 2 hours of these gentlemen. There's three gentlemen that are covered. One of the three, just to be clear, was showing some signs of guilt. So I also had a hard time imagining this documentary not being nominated because it is so powerful. It is sobering.
Mm. It is sobering. It is shocking. I mean, I was watching it all alone thinking, oh, my gosh, he has no remorse. I mean, it's a matter of fact. I mean, he was rather proud of it, actually. It was unbelievable. And Joshua Oppenheimer did a brilliant job, don't you think, in the way he sort of manipulated or he gave the guys enough freedom. It's not manipulation, but it was total freedom. And in making that film within the film, they began to realize some of the emotions that the murdered victims felt.
Absolutely. Right? This is one of those films that's very hard to describe. It's like you don't know what an apple tastes like till you taste it. You cannot know what this film's going to do to you till you experience it. That is so much of it is just jaw-dropping, absolutely jaw-dropping.
Absolutely. And in one scene, they were talking, they were killing someone. It was a recreation, of course. But then the prayers started. They said, wait a minute, we have to stop for prayers. And you wonder, how can this be? You know? Wow. This was a brilliant piece of work to me. And Oppenheimer is often heard off screen, which a lot of documentary filmmakers never allow. But it worked, and it was needed because he just got the killers so relaxed that they really opened up for him, don't you think?
Absolutely, and also, just to be complete, this is also a very dangerous film for him to make. They could have easily been attacked at any point. It's like playing with sharks.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the statements in there where the killer said, you know, all this talk about human rights really ticks me off. And so it's sort of like a rabbit hole. There are so many things said, and it's just their mindset that is very interesting to get in there to where they were living, because they call themselves gangsters, but that to them meant free men. But it also meant that they could steal and kill, and they were outside the law, right?
Right, and they became gangsters by buying and scalping movie tickets in Indonesia in 1965 and 64. And so movies were a big part of their life. So they fashioned their killing based upon Westerns or the crime dramas or gangster movies and even musicals.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. Well, I'll tell you, there is a scene in there that is the most important scene I've ever found in a documentary. And I can't get into it, but you must see this film. You have to understand what a brilliant job that Joshua did in making this film and what really happens on camera.
And the message of the film is that kind of violence still happens. And the more that message is, people get that message, the more we might become more interested in stopping it.
Absolutely. I think it gives us a great insight into a whole new mindset of people who feel no compulsion. No, they don't mind killing people. In fact, it was how to kill them the most efficiently with the less blood. Anyway,
yes.
It's a must see. And Oppenheimer was executively produced by Earl Morris and Werner Herzog. Oh, I love those two guys.
Absolutely. And there's one more thing about the film. The introduction to the film notes that the military coup and the perpetration of the genocide was supported with aid by Western governments.
Yes. And then 1 million people were killed.
Yes.
Less than a year.
Less than a year.
Incredible. So that's, and the visuals. The visuals were in such incredible shots. Even if you look it up online, you'll see some of the visuals that is really important. He's done a brilliant job.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's go to the next film. We can't give too much away, but this is a must-see. And how about Cutie in the Box? That was a relief after the act of killing.
Right, when I saw the previews, I said, I want to see that film. It looks like a fun film, and it has obviously some serious something serious to say about relationships and human communication.
Did you get to see it, or did you?
This one of the two I was not able to see because I was not able to secure a screener from the company.
Right. Well, I tell you, that was a brilliant film. It's two artists. The story, it's a love story. 40 years they've been together. And it's these great scenes of them. And they're opposites, and how they love each other so much. They go through everything. And one of my favorite scenes was her in the kitchen fixing raw fish. And he was, as an artist, she decorated the food. It was absolutely beautiful when she set the table. And he finished his meal in like three gulps. And she was saying, but you eat too fast and you don't enjoy all the work I did. And so that's who they were. And she's an artist. He's an artist. He has had most of the acclaim during their marriage, but she's come back now very strong with her own. But it's moving into their home. You feel like you're them on a daily basis, and you get to watch the ups and downs of the artists and the need for money and how they have got to have money for the rent, and somehow he scrapes it up, and they get by. And then the Guggenheim comes in, and it's a wonderful film.
And there is a film that came out a long time ago about another Japanese couple that were, both of them were artists, and it was called Hiroshima no Pika. I have to spell that. We know how to spell Hiroshima. But Hiroshima, and the next word is no, N-O, and Pika, or Pika, P-I-K-A. And it also was about a couple who are artists. And so just wanted to give that a shout-out to a 25-minute documentary that reminds me of Cutie and the Boxer.
Right. Well, Cutie is a beautiful woman, and the Boxer is a character that you just can't – you fall in love with both of them, really. They're both unique and creative people.
And I noted that this is directed by Zachary Heinzerling, if that's the right pronunciation, and that this is his first feature documentary. How about that? It gets nominated.
That's incredible. Well done. Yeah. I was wondering, I thought, I've never seen anything from him before. Well, so that's his first one. He's done a brilliant job. All right, well, let's go to Dirty Wars. What do you think of
Dirty Wars has a certain kind of impact similar to The Act of Killing, and it was directed by Rick Rowley, and it's centered around the work of an investigative journalist named Jeremy Scahill, that's S-C-A-H-I-L-L, again, S-C-A-H-I-L-L, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Jeremy's last name properly. And Jeremy's been on TV a lot, on talk shows, talking about his investigative work. And this film begins at when he discovers he's in Afghanistan covering that war, and he discovers a U.S. raid that unintentionally killed civilians. And that led to him increasing his investigation of what's going on around the world with the U.S. interventions. And he's finding more and more raids that are conducted by secret military, relatively secret military units. And it's also sobering. It appears that we're, the United States is around the world and attempting to perhaps do something good, but unintentionally causing quite a bit of havoc. And, of course, that havoc is being reported in the mainstream media, but I don't think nearly as much as Jeremy's work has revealed.
Absolutely. 75 countries we are in around the world.
Mm-hmm.
What Jeremy said in the film.
And he gets into the history, and it seems as if the American military has been seemingly out of control and at war with the world for quite a while.
Right.
And
by
the end of this movie, I felt as if I had seen that World War III is happening, and it's just happening quietly and without being covered by the press.
Yes. It was compelling. I was a nervous wreck for him. Expected him to get killed so many times in that film, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. The chances are he would have been killed. He beat the odds.
He surely did. I don't know why he's still alive. He's a lucky man. But what he did was, it was like the old 70s-style conspiracy thriller. We were thinking, wow. Wow, I mean, where's the popcorn? This is a great film. I was blown away from the information that he gave us. It's shocking what is going on, and I'm sure the government has some good intention behind it, but there is a lot of what they call collateral damage where innocent people are being killed. And there's also the story of the one man who goes on the kill list when he's never been brought to trial, or he's just put on the list. And when his father files suit against the government, the U.S. government, to bring some charges against his son, they refused. And he was killed, and so was his 17-year-old son.
Absolutely. So, that story did get a measure of mainstream coverage, but the details behind it were not revealed, and that's one of the things about documentary films is that you get the whole story, and the whole story can change what your idea of that story is. Dirty Wars also has a great website, so you can get a lot simply by going to the website. So I wholeheartedly encourage people to see Dirty Wars.
Absolutely. I think it's very important, not only for the brilliant way that he edited it. His images are outstanding, stunning images he uses for his B-roll and his dialogue over the over view is so just, it is compelling and it is engaging, and you cannot stop watching it. It's really a thriller. To me, it was.
Right, and you know, the film Blackfish, which was one of the films that, that was on the short list of 15 documentaries, but didn't get nominated. Do you remember that one about the keeping of orcas in at SeaWorld?
Yes.
And so that film was shown on CNN, and that caused quite a stir, and that got people behind it. Dirty Wars is the kind of film that if it were to be given a larger distribution, a more exposure, there would be some some political activism about making sure that, that we conduct ourselves more intelligently and more compassionately in our in our international affairs.
Absolutely, that was a brilliant film, Blackfish, and but it was so emotionally charged for me that I couldn't watch the whole thing. I got too upset. And you would have, think I would say that about either one of these, The Act of Killing or Dirty Wars, but the, I couldn't stop watching these two because you knew there had to be a better ending. Something good had to happen, and it did, in my opinion. In both films, you felt you had one of them that you really learned something, and the other that there was a major shift in the whole direction of the film by the end of it. So they were worth seeing, but and so is the Blackfish. You really need to see that so you understand what the fish are going through. It was from the fish's point.
So my concern is that since it got shown by on CNN, it caused quite a stir. So that it caused some activism that would not have happened if it had not been given a proper exposure to the public. So that's
right.
The underlying issue here for these films is how do we get these films out there so people see them and be affected by them and then respond to them.
Yes. Well, what about 20 Feet from Stardom?
That's totally delightful. That's all I can say. That's the fun film to watch. And it was directed by Morgan Neville, and he had directed at least 8 previous feature documentaries. And he covers the world of backup singers. When this film came out, I started getting emails telling me I must see it. I'm grateful that the company was able to send me a screener. And you get to a sense of the world of backup singers on stage. 20 feet away from them is a superstar. And the difference between being a backup singer and a superstar is light years. And yet these backup singers have the voice and the power and the talent of a superstar. So what makes somebody a superstar and what makes somebody a backup singer? They cover about 4 or 5 backup singers, and they each have different stories, and there's a lot of sadness there, and there's also a lot of triumph there. And so you get to see the whole range of what can happen with backup singers. And, of course, the most fun is that you get to hear them sing, and you get to hear Bruce Springsteen talk about it. I don't remember all the talent that was interviewed for it. Carol, maybe you remember some of those names?
No, because I didn't. That's the only one I didn't get to see.
Oh, you didn't see 20 Feet from Stardom? Yes. So there, Bruce Springsteen and 2 or 3 other major talents were also interviewed and talking about the role that backup singers have in their lives and their view of them. 20 Feet from Stardom is one of those films. It's about 1.5 hours long. It could have been 3 hours long. I did not want that film to end.
Oh, how wonderful to hear. What about Bette Midler? Was she in it?
Yeah, right. That's one of the people that talked about backup singers, and they all were obviously very appreciative of their backup singers, and they acknowledged the challenge that backup singers face.
Right. Well, that's good. They had to have a couple of light ones. The two cuties.
Yeah, that's why I wish they would nominate 10 documentary films like they're now nominating up to 10 best picture films for the narratives, because there's too many great documentaries, and the five just does not begin to really cover the world of documentary films, because there's a lot more documentary films made and released each year than there are narrative films. And for instance, there was a Miss You Can Do It. Does that name ring a bell? It was shown on HBO, and actually, was it? Did it make it nominated? No, it didn't. It couldn't be nominated. Is that a new title on you, Miss You Can Do It?
Yeah, I haven't heard of that. No.
Okay, so Miss You Can Do It was an HBO, one of HBO's many documentaries that they're showing. HBO is a hero to documentary filmmakers and filmmaking. And it covers the work of a woman named Abby Curran, C-U-R-A-N. I don't know how to pronounce that, Curran. And she was born with cerebral palsy, and she didn't let that stop her from what I say is relentlessly competing in beauty pageants. And she'd need to have a male escort when she went on stage for these beauty pageants to help her walk. And she ended up winning Miss Iowa in 2008.
And then God, how incredible.
Right, and then she became the first woman with a physical disability to compete in the Miss USA pageant. And then the name Miss You Can Do It comes from a pageant that she founded, again, Miss You Can Do It, for little girls and girls in their early teens who have various kinds of disabilities. And they're celebrated. This pageant, of course, has no losers. And so to reveal myself as a softie, I pretty much started crying at the beginning of this film, and I didn't stop till the film ended. It was so beautiful.
It was that good. Okay.
Yes.
I love it. Well, okay. Let's talk about some films that we really loved this year.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites was Big Boys Gone Bananas. I'll tell you, I loved the fact that the filmmaker had made a film and it was not allowed in, well, it was accepted by a film festival in L.A., but when he got here, there was a lawsuit filed against him, or a threat of, from Dole. It was a threat. Dole, Pineapple, you know, the Dole fruit company.
O-L-E, Dole.
D-O-L-E, Dole, the food company.
Mm-hmm.
So he started filming what happened to him with his film called Bananas. It was a story of injustices done towards farm workers in South America. And actually, the farm workers had won the case. Well, Dole didn't like that. They didn't like him doing a film on that, so they really hounded him. And his film, this second film, is the story of them coming after him, going after a filmmaker in Denmark who stood his ground, and the whole country got behind him, and so did Europe, and in my opinion, he won. You have to see the film, and it's the David and Goliath of the year.
And it's called Big Boys Gone Bananas?
Yes.
And it came out in 2013?
Yes, Frednik Gertsen. It was 2011 it came out. Sorry, I didn't see it till this year.
Oh, I
and
see.
It may not have released over here till this year, but it is so good. I think you will find you're cheering for the filmmaker because he would not give in. They couldn't break him.
Okay, that I'd love to see that.
What did you like? Tell me something else you liked.
Well, I went wild over a film that did get nominated. I mean, did make it to the short list. I'm going to double check here. Life According to Sam. It too is an HBO documentary, and I thank HBO. They are faithful in sending me the screeners so I can see them and review them. Life According to Sam covers a young man named Sam Burns, who was born with a disease called progeria. I may be mispronouncing it, progeria, and only 250 people, and children, excuse me, 250 children on the planet Earth at any one time have this disease. And you essentially are born dying. You're born aging, and it affects you very early on in infancy. In babyhood, and the average age of death for children with this disease is 13. That's the average age. And wow. Sam was born to a couple, each of whom are doctors. And the doctors quickly discovered that no research has been done, or no to little research has been done, on finding help for people with progeria. And so it turns out that the care they give to their son, Sam, enables him to go to school and accomplish an unbelievable amount with a disease that makes your bones smaller and brittle. It changes the way your body looks and your face looks. And all progeria children tend to look alike. And they look very different from the rest of the human population. And Sam had an incredible spirit, and he played in the band. He played in a high school band, and he did a lot of things that people never thought that could happen. But the frustrating part of the story is that the parents are trying to get research funding, and they do get research funding, and the research is covered by FDA rules, which use a particular model, a particular kind of research model from what they call science, and they had a drug that was showing promise, but they weren't allowed to share it, and that model may work for diseases where millions of people are affected by it, but when 250 people are affected by it, and it is a death sentence, they should not have had to wait so long to get this drug approved. And so it also is a quiet commentary on onerous and irrelevant FDA rules when it comes to terminal illnesses. A heartwarming film, and Sam is a winning character.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I like some of the social doc. So The House I Live In, director Eugene Jarecki was brilliant. I also loved Hot Coffee. I thought that I wanted to find out what was all about that hot coffee thing. Everybody was saying it was a frivolous lawsuit. So what's this all about? And boy, did they explain to you what the truth was behind the deception that was in the newspapers and on television. So it's very important. Both of those are really good films for that kind of information. And my two favorites for life-changing, the life-changing film I love the most is I Am. Tom Shadyac?
Yes.
Boy, he did a fabulous job in producing and directing that film. And then, and I really recommend it. I recommend it. Just get into it, enjoy it. It will shock you. It's truly based on how connected we are as human beings. He's done a wonderful job to tell us a good story. And I think that's my favorite life changer. And the fun one I love was Deceptive Practices, the story of Ricky Jay. Have you seen that yet?
No, these are the ones I've never even heard of.
Oh, you would love the Ricky Jay Deceptive Practices, particularly if you like magic at all. It's a very good look at that whole realm of magic. And you know something? You end up wondering how, you can't imagine how he did some of the things that he did. It really does lead you to believe it might be magic.
Yeah. I get about once or twice a year, I get a YouTube of a new magician, and there's zero explanation for what they accomplished.
It's wonderful. And they take, sometimes it takes them 2 or 3 years to work on a trick and master it. I never knew that.
Well, that makes sense. From what I see, that makes sense.
Yes. They dream it up, and then they have to figure it out, and then they have to put it on display. And you will see that Ricky Jay is working with 3 mirrors, so he's looking at all sides of himself. They want to see what you see in all parts of the room. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot behind the show that you see.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up for this year? Have you reviewed some new docs recently you want to mention?
Well, I want to mention 2 more documentary films that came out in 2013. And
okay.
Both of them should have been nominated. And the first one is called Toxic Hot Seat. And it is produced and directed by James Redford, Robert's son. And James Redford is quite a filmmaker himself. He's been involved with both narrative filmmaking and documentary filmmaking. He made The Big Picture, which is about dyslexia. And Toxic Hot Seat is about decades of chemicals being put into our furniture, and including bedroom furniture, including children's furniture, that are toxic. And the fight, the what seems like decades-long fight to remove those chemicals from our homes. And this is what's good about this. This is, in a certain sense, it's a typical environmental film. It shows something that we're doing to hurt ourselves. A lot of times, those films don't really show a story. They don't show a solution. This film shows the ability of environmental activism to make a difference. So they are now making our furniture without toxic chemicals. They're called fire retardants. And so Toxic Hot Seat should have been nominated. It was a textbook perfect environmental film. And then
good.
Jennifer Stein, mm-hmm.
I know the he did something on water. He did a wonderful about our water shortage out here, and he gave us a lot of ideas on how to save water. And I saw it online, and it said, if you want a screener, we'll send it to you. How many people can you get to see this film? So I put down, yes, I'll get 10 people to see the film. And they sent me the screener, and I started inviting people over, and we watched it. And Don, 10 days later, they call me from Redford's office saying, did you show the film, and what did people say, and how did they like it? And I was so impressed with how generous they were. And see, their intent was to make sure people saw it. They wanted to get it in the hands of those people who could make a difference, which is all of us out here on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that film is called Watershed.
Yes, right.
And Robert Redford was the primary instigator for the film. And, of course, his son was critical to the production of it.
Absolutely. It's so important. We do have a problem, and now we've got we're in the worst drought ever recorded. So that film has a lot of meaning and a lot of merit at this time.
And so another film that came out in 2013 was called Desert Runners, and it's made by Jennifer Steinman, and she's a relatively new documentary filmmaker, but she's hit the ground running. And with Desert Runners, she follows runners who enter what are called ultra marathons, and it involves running 4 marathons at one run, not without breaks, on the harshest deserts on the earth.
Wow.
And there's, I'm not sure about my figures here. I think there's 4 or 5 deserts that they run, and the goal of some of them was to run all 4 or 5 ultra marathons in 1 year. And so she goes to the harshest deserts on earth to cover these races, and it was so. So dramatically, the adversity was so dramatic that I was wondering how the filmmakers survived just covering the marathon, and I wanted to see a documentary about the making of the documentary.
Right on, Don. Oh, my goodness.
Go ahead.
I just think it's so important that you just keep seeing as many docs as possible and keep writing about them and keep coming back to the show to keep us up with what is going on out there.
Oh, well thank you. Can I make a pitch for some changes at the Oscars?
Certainly.
Well, I'd like to see, as I said earlier, the number of Oscars nominated, the number of films nominated for the Oscar to be 10. And then the number of films that hit the shortlist should be 25. The Academy Awards, the annual broadcast, is it's got to be 1 billion people watch it around the world. It is the most exposure any one documentary film can have, is to be nominated for documentary short or documentary feature. And documentary films are not getting near the exposure they need or they deserve. We would be a better nation if we saw the documentary films that we are making for ourselves. So it would help everybody for the nominations to be increased to 10 and the shortlist be increased to 25. And also, the Screen Actors Guild has its own award ceremony for actors in a year, separate from the Academy. So there needs to be a separate documentary film show, an annual award show, that could also give much more exposure and for documentary films. So I wanted to just say, let's get a separate award program going for that.
Good for you. Yes, that sounds exactly like what we need, more exposure. I do know this will make you happy, that Netflix is starting to produce documentaries. They're starting to buy them and produce them. And so, of course, Amazon now is following suit. They're both trying to catch up with or get ahead of HBO. And Netflix now has more subscribers than HBO. So, and they have a strong base of documentaries, and they are starting to really, they're going to film festivals and purchasing. So that is good news. I think it's wonderful that docs are hot. We've always felt that from the heart, but now it's very true.
Well, that's good news, and I just want that to keep going. I'd like to see the largest networks include documentary films in what they do, so something like Blackfish can get that kind of exposure, and then get that kind of response from the public.
Yes, they can change lives. These films are life changers. They are raising the consciousness on some very important issues. Everyone we've talked about today does. Cutie and the Boxer is about tenacity, in my mind. This tenacious woman was going to make this marriage work no matter what. And it did. And in retrospect, she's been in love with him, and he's been in love with her for 40 years, and they have made a good life together. And you just feel so honored to get to see a part of their life. And the other films that we've seen or talked about today are all telling us what's really important, what's going on behind the scenes that the newspapers are not reporting. I think we have to keep up with that. And the only way, I believe, is the true documentarian is today's news reporter.
Hear, hear. I totally endorse that statement.
Yeah. So we just have to see, protect them and keep promoting their films.
Mm-hmm. Carol, so I left out one title I wanted to mention. Do we have time?
Yes.
A film called God Loves Uganda. And that is about the submission of legislation and the passing of legislation, extremely anti-gay legislation in the African nation of Uganda. And what was behind and who was behind that legislation was not the people of Uganda, but Americans associated with the Christian evangelical movement going there and using all their economic resources to just propagandize against homosexuality. And what's going on there is quite brutal, because this law was signed into effect by the president. And so you get to see and know the Americans there and see the propaganda happening and see its effect. And then at the end, the film opens it up to American money being used around the world to promote the taking away of civil rights from homosexuals around the world. It's the United States of America. It's our money. And the filmmaker for God Loves Uganda was on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. And at least it made it to the short list of 15.
Okay, thank you. I will make sure I see that. Thank you for telling me.
That's another sobering film.
Sobering film, you're not kidding. And we have to, well, it's educating. And it's, again, it's raising the consciousness. Who would think that we would care about Uganda and what goes on in somebody's bedroom in Uganda? So I don't understand these things. But I do know one thing. I definitely appreciate the work you're doing, and I hope you'll come back in a few months and bring us up to par with the latest docs.
It'll be my pleasure, as always.
Okay, Don, thank you so much. Claire, we really appreciate you and all you do for us on the show. And we'll see you next
time. Yes, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks again, Don.
Okay, thank you, Claire.
Take care.
Bye.
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 I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.